There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Queen's an important woman, you see. She's the crown jewel of the entire monarchy. You betcha, eh? And I was like, the queen is an 80-year-old retarded lizard who does nothing and serves no purpose.
All right, we want to start this thing up, Marcus?
Yeah.
All right, welcome to the show. I'm Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks. With us.
It's cold outside. Where's my perco? I can't seem to find it. Well, I guess I'll just have to use old Mary.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to put a zipper on this. I'm going to have to make a zipper with these teeth. Good and warm. But my arms are cold. Oh, well, better get back to old Mary. Oh, bit snug.
Yeah.
That's a bit snug.
It's not good if you're sewing something, it sounds like a boot walking through slush. That tends to mean that you're sewing up human flesh. And of course, we're talking about Ed Gein Part 2.
Oh, yeah. So we left off Ed Gein last time at his mother's funeral.
Oh.
That is absolutely devastated at the funeral. But as far as the people of Plainfield are concerned, following the funeral, Ed's just fine. Not a whole lot of change in his outward behavior. Still busying himself with handiwork around town. Mm-hmm. Still
Ed
babysitting kids.
He's just, he's a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something about Ed is a little weird.
Yeah, just a little bit off.
He's a bit
of I don't know what it is about him.
Mm-hmm. He's a bit of an oddball. Augusta is dead.
Oh, yeah.
And he's.
But I also find, I want to go back over a bit overview too again about Ed Gein. The more and more I read about it, it's so interesting kind of how mundane it all was.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to Ed Gein. People are looking for him to be this sort of like homicidal maniac because we're going to go through the details of his crimes. And he wasn't. It's like everyone's wish he was a mother rapist.
Yeah, that's what bothered the people of Plainfield most when all of this stuff came out. When it came out that, you know, he had a box with more, you know, more noses than heads in his apartment. You know, when it came out that he had gut one of the local leaders of business, they expected him to be just this horrible monster when in reality, it was just old Ed and you know, they do the interviews with people in Plainfield after they caught him, and it's just all these old men go, oh, you know, this normal guy, bit odd.
I mean,
just a normal guy.
For Plainfield, Wisconsin, being quiet, being humble, that's normal. Everyone's crazy behind those bizarre eyes of a lot of the Wisconsin that a lot of Wisconsinites have. Unlike a Richard Ramirez type who wanted to be like the night prowler, he wanted to brand himself as something spectacular, Ed Gein didn't think he was doing anything that wrong.
No.
No, because he probably had three uncles that had shoes made out of human feet.
I'm sure he did.
Like, who knows? You don't know what they have in each other's in these farmhouses. They're all out there diddling cows. Putting a dress on them, saying, "Oh, at least we're married." You know what I mean?
Like, exactly. You put a cow in a dress. You get yourself a wife.
Well, there were the only people that were really uncomfortable in Ed's presence, of course, were women.
Right.
You know, and while he was never inappropriate with women, he was one of those guys that tended to ogle them a little bit. They talk about how when all the men would gather up, whenever all the men were working together, they'd go and eat at lunch at somebody's house, that Ed would just kind of sit there after everyone else is done and just stare at the women in the kitchen until they noticed him, at which point he would just fucking pick up and leave immediately.
And the thing that also disconcerted a lot of the people is that he started switching out his belts for a measuring rope, you know, like you do for like tailors have, which is really weird because he would just always go up to women. He's like, "Hey, you want to play soft limbo?" He's like, "What?" And then he just wraps the thing around her tits and just goes like, "Oh, limbo."
Right.
That's
right.
49 inches. That's interesting.
And of course, he was always fish hooking the gals with his finger, putting them in her mouth and holding them up like they were big tuna. And be like, "Take a picture. Look at the size of this one I got.
This is the one that didn't get away. You should have seen the one that did. Size of the boat." Anyways, I'll kill her.
So he perfected what feminists now call the male gaze. He was very good at the male gaze. Just stare until they get creeped out.
Yeah.
Except for there was also another story when he first got arrested that came out about of a man who felt very uncomfortable by Ed Gein. A 300-pound Nina Barber who owns a... Is that how you pronounce that? Nina?
Nina, Wisconsin. Yeah, they make they make a lot of manhole covers. Very successful town.
That's sad. A 300-pound Nina Barber who owns a farm near Slayer Ed Gein's house said the recluse pinched him on the belly once and said he'd be just about right for roasting. The barber also revealed that though he didn't think too much of the remark at the time, he definitely noticed that Ed had a peculiar look in his eye.
Yeah, the headline from that story, and that was a headline story. The entire story was about that. The headline was, 300-pound man recalls pinch and remark by Gein.
I mean, you know, that's kind of a funny little remark. I mean, obviously, in hindsight, you realize how creepy it is. I'm surprised Gein didn't want to make him a couch. That's kind of nice.
Well, he was a man, and Gein worked exclusively in the medium of middle-aged women.
Mm,
and to be honest, if I had a nickel for how many times I've been pinched and told how good I'd be for roasting, I'd have like 45 cents.
That's a lot.
Well, one such middle-aged woman in particular was the owner of the local tavern, Mary Hogan. Mm. Now,
Hogan seems like a 60-year-old version of Jackie.
Yes, Jackie Zabrowski from the Round Table.
And Henry's sister. Loud, foul-mouthed, drunk all the time, checkered past, or at least rumored to have a checkered past, supposedly been divorced twice, scandalous in the 50s, and she had connections to the Chicago mob and had worked in Chicago, specifically Cicero, as a madam.
Mary Hogan, strong name for a strong gal.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. She was rated to Hulk Hogan, and she was the one that gave him his patented body.
Oh, I love that body.
Also, in order to be a Chicago mobster's wife, you have to be able to at least drink 9 beers and eat 2 Chicago buckets of pierogies, which are technically bathtubs.
Mm-hmm. Make the meatballs right as well.
So for Ed, at this point, it's been about 8 years since the death of his mother. Mm. And in the interim, he started to lose his grip on reality just a little bit.
Right. So this is my question. In terms of these next couple of details, I think there's still a lot to debate about whether or not Ed Gein was actually nuts or not. Or if
really?
He was just really... I know he was... Yes, obviously, he wasn't together. I mean, he's not going to be a fucking radiologist anytime soon.
Right.
But he definitely made up some details, I think. But this stuff's really interesting because he began to see... He said that he would walk... like outside of his house and basically during those 8 years of isolation, he went totally insane.
Yeah.
And he said that he saw vultures in the trees staring at him and shit like that.
Hundreds of vultures dripping with blood and entrails.
You ever been to Plainfield? That's all they got over there. They got a bunch of vultures staring down
look,
at little
like
Ed Gein.
Looks like the pigeons are getting together again. Do we feed them bread? No, George. You know what we got to feed them is all these dead rats.
Got to. That's all Plainfield has is vultures and dead rats and Ed Gein's ghost.
But he said he would also see faces in leaves and they would start like going like which is like not helping somebody's attitude.
Well, to be fair, this is before television really picked up. There was a couple of basic channels. You had your 1, 2s, and 3s. This was before HD. He was just trying to entertain himself. And really, to be in the mind of Ed Gein, that's a hell of a television show. Creepy.
Yeah, and I wish they didn't make Channel 4 the thing called Haunted Dreams Made of Broken Glass and Spider's Legs that he also was addicted to.
He loved watching
that show.
So the other things that he had reported that he started to hear at this time is that he started to hear his mother's voice as he was falling asleep at night. And he never exactly said what his mother's voice was telling him because, of course, every time he started to talk about his mother, he started blubbering like a fucking child.
Yeah.
And
hey, Ed, you think about cutting out the pussies? It's a fun idea. It's a good idea.
No, Mom, I don't want to cut out the pussies, Mom.
I think you should. And as your mother, I command you to cut out their pussy.
All right, I already have 9.
Have you ever noticed how sometimes a woman's arms and her legs kind of, they look like violin bows? Make some of those. That'd be pretty fucking righteous.
That's
I'm up
exciting.
Here talking with
Well, what's your name, Napoleon? Ah, it's funny. This guy's funny, and he says all this fucked up stuff, and I'm laughing, and he's eating me out. Things have really changed a lot for me up here, Ed.
Yeah, I'm happy Mama Gein has a good time in heaven. There's no doubt about that. And she still encourages crafts, even post-mortem.
Oh, yeah, big That's arts nice. And crafts woman.
Yeah, she was.
So Mary Hogan, of course, Ed's got his mother screaming in his ears. He's falling asleep at night. And Mary Hogan, she was the exact type of woman that Ed's mother warned him against. But conversely, she was also a lot like Augusta herself. Both very firm women. No-nonsense business owners. Both had thick German accents.
Mm. And thick German bodies.
Oh, yes. Most importantly, Augusta and Mary Hogan looked a great deal alike.
And this nothing got Ed Gein's fucking basement boiler churning harder than Mary Hogan.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and this duality caused like a kind of short circuit in Ed's brains because the two were virtual mirror images of each other because he saw his mother as the personification of good and purity in this world. She was dead. The other one, Mary Hogan, evil and lusty, but alive.
Mm-hmm. But that was the problem.
Yeah, and that
the alive part.
Yes.
Yeah, you got to change that. Mustache, for sure, right? Got a little bit of a mustache.
Most likely, yeah.
Got to.
I think it's more like potential for mustache because got a big open upper lip. Dying for a mustache. I also find this interesting because the psychologists at the time, when they were working with Ed, they were basically saying that he had this sort of, again, this duality of like mindset that both like he was obsessed with his mother. He loved his mother to the point of probably ejaculating in his pants and also hated her viscerally and wanted to kill her. And I also think it's got a lot to do with the sort of, there's a complex that goes on with sort of stereotypical male thinking between like Madonna whore thinking, mm-hmm. and thinking a woman is either total filth or an angel, and she's either a saint or somebody who needs to be made into a tuxedo.
Yes, that's right.
So despite Ed's despite the conflicting thoughts that he had in his head, Mary had always been very nice to him. Hmm. She was always very friendly towards him, but Ed didn't have his mother to guide him. Ed didn't have his mother to tell him, get away from her. Because before, Ed, he never went out when his mother was still alive. He never went out to have a couple of beers after a long day's work. So he didn't have his mother to tell him to get away from her immediately. Get out of there. This woman is sin. She is filth. If you stay with her, she will bring you down and rend your world asunder. And he had a bit of a crush on Mary, and the sexual feelings that Ed had for Mary Hogan would be what would push him over the edge, because his mother told him again and again, women were sin and his mother's word was law. Mary had to go. So on December 8th, 1954, Ed put a .32 caliber bullet into Mary's head as she closed up shop, loaded her body into his truck, took her back to the Gein homestead, and when asked what he did with the body, Ed said he strung her up in the summer kitchen, cut up the body, saved some of the parts, and burned the ones that he didn't want.
Hmm. Very Native American of him.
Yes.
Except they used all the parts, so I think he should think about that. Poor Mary Hogan.
I know. Like, I mean, this is really like you just feel for her so much because she was just a body tavern owner in small town Wisconsin.
She would have
also
been a
you
good
look at
friend.
She's staring at somebody like Ed, who is this fucking gaunt, weird skeleton man who she's probably just being nice to.
Yeah.
Because he's hanging around just staring at her all day long, talking about how her boobies must hold a lot of wine if they're made in a wine sack. That's funny, Ed.
She was just being a good bartender.
That's
like
right.
There's that regular weirdo who's always lonely that comes to a bar. She was just being a good bartender. She mm-hmm. got killed for it.
Well,
technically,
yeah.
That's me. That's what I've been doing.
Oh, just going to a bar and being a lonely weirdo?
Yeah, but I'm not staring.
Yeah.
You know, I'm writing in my journal with a gigantic quill.
That's very scary. It's very scary looking at chicks' breasts as if they're bags of Franzia. That's not right. That's not right, Henry. I'm surprised he used a gun. He seems like a knife guy to me.
Oh, no. In fact, Ed,
he didn't like killing, right?
He hated, he had no problem killing small critters like raccoons, possums, things like that. But he couldn't stand stand the sight of blood. He would faint, in fact, at the sight of blood. And if you say, like, okay, there's these, you know, that's kind of a discrepancy if he butchered these women, but he always maintained that when he was in these sorts of, when he actually killed these women, that he was in a daze, that he doesn't remember killing or field dressing Mary Hogan at all.
And that's a part of why I think his claim, his confessions are dubious, because he always brought that up. Every single time they wanted him to go into the grisly details, he'd be like, I don't remember that. I was in a bit of a daze. Meanwhile, right. They're pumping him full of food, which we'll talk about, because he was just obsessed with food. Mm-hmm. They kept bringing him pie and fried chicken and every single thing that a Wisconsin mother does to make her son well insulated against the winter.
Well, right. Of course he loved the food. He had been eating nothing but pork and beans for literally a decade. I'm not fucking lying there. That is all he would do. He would just go to Louise Hill's store, load up on pork and beans, go home, heat up the pork and beans on the little range oven that he had, and then just eat it straight out of the can and then throw the can on the floor of his house.
Pork and beans. Pork and beans. Love some good pork and beans. I think he was eating right.
I will eat pork and beans for dinner anytime.
Tootie House.
It was really just the vessel that he was using to eat them in. That was the problem.
Just yeah.
I think it was the skull. Which is the thing. It's like, if there's a way to debase pork and beans anymore, it's just eat it out of a human skull. Or does it elevate it? I'm not really sure anymore, because my brain is fried. And so, again, so Ed is a product killer, not a process killer.
Yes.
His whole point is that he wants to get to these bodies. But he also barely understands why he wants to get to these bodies. And I think with Mary Hogan specifically, it was just way too much. He saw her. She was too perfect. I mean, she had that rock and rectangle body with the head like a turtle with a wig on it. And that was exactly what he wanted.
Oh, I love that. A gal with a turtle head with a little blonde wig. Snap at me, baby.
And, you know, because it's kind of like seeing that prized, like for me, a tube of Berkshire pork all riddled with fat and delicious. And yeah, it's like maybe tucked away in a hidden refrigerator, and that I know that it's over there, and maybe it's like $200 of a piece of it, and I'll just splurge and I'll get it, or I'll break in the store at night and I'll fucking steal it because it's haunting my dreams. That's what Mary Hogan was to him.
Well, you want to pay for it. You don't want to be a thief. He just had a great life. You know when people hallucinate in the desert and they begin to see the things that they desire everywhere he went? He saw couches, belts, jackets. I mean, this guy really had a fun imagination.
Yeah, he did. So coincidentally, at around the same time that Mary Hogan disappeared, four other people had gone missing in this area of Wisconsin.
Right, which is a lot because, again, there are not many people in Plainfield at this time. Not many there now.
Yeah. It's a lot, but Mary's disappearance was lumped in with these other four, and nobody, of course, suspected harmless old Ed, who had actually been drinking at Mary's the night of her disappearance. The cops went out and said, "Hey, Ed, you know, were you at Mary's last night?" Like, "Yeah, I was there." And he's like, "Well, did you see anything weird?" "No." I'm like, "All right, see you later."
See you, Ed. Because also, he was really gaunt and really scrawny. But so they were like, that's what we'll see later on too, is that no one believed that he could even commit these crimes because he was so skinny and weak. But actually, he had what we were talking about last episode. He had that farmer strength.
Yeah.
So he just flopped Mary over like she was a side of beef, because that's what she was, and dragged her in the car like it was zippity-dippity because he had them hay baling hands.
Yeah, deceptively strong.
And as a side note, Ed would be completely cleared of any involvement with any of the other disappearances. It was like there was some sort of weird vortex going on in Wisconsin in 1954.
All right.
But not long after, I mean, shit, we joked earlier about Ed making the Mary Hogan jokes. He actually did make Mary Hogan jokes. He's one of the men who employed Ed from time to time. A one Mr. Elmo Uyik.
Now, that's a classic name.
Elmo Uyik.
Elmo. Now, that'll get you elected mayor in 90% of municipalities in Wisconsin. Elmo's a strong name.
It sounds like he's born with four strands of hair and never got more than that.
Yeah, yeah. Why do you need more than that, Henry? You know, you have to ask yourself that.
Man, well, one day, Elmo, he was teasing Ed about Mary. He said, Eddie, if you spent more time courting Mary, she'd be cooking for you instead of missing. And Ed just sort of, he rolled his eyes, he scrunched up his nose, and he said,
she's not missing. She's down at the house right now.
And for a while, this was...
That is funny. God, I love Ed. God, Ed, keep Eddie around more.
And for a while, this was Ed's favorite joke. Like, you ever get that joke that you just want to tell to every single person?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and when he was in the company of others and the subject of Bernice came up, as it often did in Plainfield at the time, Ed would, I mean, he'd get that odd little grin on his face, and he'd just say...
She's at the farm right now. I went and got her in my pickup truck and took her home. I got her pussy on my cock right now.
This is
that
great.
Where did I put her? I have her whole vagina inside of my whitey tighties.
You know, he's a little bit, he's not my favorite comedian. He's a little blue for me, but you can't deny he's funny. You can't deny it. He is just, he's got a humor. He laughs a little bit too long at himself, but well, that kind of gets a little creepy there. But
and his joke, it'd be met with nervous laughter. Just people like, oh, yeah, you know, he's just, you know, he's got his own sense of humor.
He's a bit of an oddball.
An oddball.
It's like when a special needs younger brother says he's going to be the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, which is a versatile story for me. My little brother still might do it.
He might. He's not dead yet.
Yeah, I just talked to him about it. So next year, look out, Packer fans. You got a new head coach coming.
So nobody, you know, suspected at all after Ed's jokes just how much truth they'd find in his statement when years later, Mary Hogan's head would be found in a brown paper bag in Ed's kitchen.
Years later.
Years later.
Okay, so that
Three years later.
So what's on the head? After 3 years, what do you got? All the meat's gone, right? It's just the skull at that point.
He had preserved all of them.
Yeah,
I put a bunch of pictures up of his crime scene photos last night on the last podcast Facebook page. And if you notice, they become brown, sort of like a George Hamilton or a Kris Jenner.
Sure,
perfectly like suntanned.
So Ed, you know, you think he's lonely. You think no one's after Mary Hogan. The only person that ever talked to him was gone forever. Mm. Not true. Ed did have a very admittedly very small circle of friends, and they were all teenagers or children. But a little after Mary Hogan's disappearance, a rumor started to circulate around Plainfield. His best friend was a teenager named Bobby Hill.
Okay.
And Bobby was said to be Ed's only friend, only actual friend. And Bobby had told his parents a disturbing little story. Bob, he hung out with Ed quite a bit. They hunted rabbits. They went to high school football games together. And Bobby was also one of the very few people to ever go inside Ed's house. And on one occasion, Ed allegedly brought a pair of preserved human heads to show to Bobby. And when Bob asked where he got them, Ed said that a cousin of his had picked him up in the Philippines during the war. And it brought him back for Ed to have.
All right.
Yeah, but just so weird, Ed, that why are you wearing one?
That's what they do in the South Seas.
Just having fun in the South Seas. How else are you going to eat your soup if you're not wearing a full human head?
I don't know. We eat soup a lot, Ed. You're funny. Gosh gee willikers. Yeah. You want to go play some jacks outside?
So Bobby Hill is just a teenager. He's hanging out with Ed's about, what, 42 years old at this point? Maybe a little bit older, 44, something like that?
He is, yeah. He's definitely in his 40s.
Right.
I think little old Bobby was trying to seduce Ed.
It's very possible.
Put it on Bobby.
I had a friend, when I was a small child, I had a friend who was in his 40s.
Yeah?
Yeah, Clayton.
Okay, do you have any repressed memories you want to bring
not
up?
Not at all.
Clayton was a good guy,
to say this every, no, he was a piece of shit.
Okay.
But he did not molest me.
He didn't.
Oh, he didn't make you play Find the Rope with him?
That's amazing.
Are you sure he didn't play him? He didn't play the game Kiss the Clayton with you?
Mm-hmm. I'm 100% sure. I saw my first porno at the age of 5. I knew what sex was. Uh-huh. I knew what was weird and what wasn't.
Was it from Clayton?
No, it was not from Clayton. It was not from Clayton.
So at no point did he want you to do the old chew the bubble gum between my legs.
No, all nothing. I'm saying is that I know what Bobby Hill is all about. All right, I would have been friends with Ed. I would have been friends with the oddball.
What does that say about us, Henry?
We're normal.
Oh, okay.
No, you guys are like a couple of my closest friends.
Yeah, so I think we're like Ed.
We're technically like Ed.
God damn
but
it.
We're funnier versions. We're funny about it. We're being funny.
So was he! In his way.
He was a goof. He was a goof.
Yeah.
Well, I do like the idea of Bob and Eddie hanging out, and it's just because it's true. It's like Bobby is this like 1950s like June Cleaver, like, oh, right. Well, that sure is pretty funny, Eddie. And Eddie is this bent old fucking pervert who's like, while he's talking to Bobby, he's got his dick through a severed vagina in his pants.
Right.
As they're hanging out. Well, they're sitting there talking about the baseball game and talking about how it's like, I heard they run out of malt at the malt shop. They're going to have to change the sign. And he's like, yeah, that is pretty funny. Meanwhile, he's got like cum inside of a hollowed out woman's feet inside of his fucking garage.
You know, just doing different things. Just because you're friends doesn't mean you have to have the same passions. You know, that's very important to remember.
So when Bob told his parents about the heads, they weren't concerned or even surprised. They believed him.
You know, people talk about rape culture, and I can understand why they say such things, but really, it's just the culture of corpses in Wisconsin. Just the comfort of bones.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, okay, he's got... I mean, at no point was this a red flag that the man might be doing something completely deplorable?
No, they just said it's just the sort of thing that oddball's gonna have in his house.
It's not!
Also, it's really not. And also, it's very funny how liberally they use the term oddball in every single documentary and interview about him. I watched the old school A&E biography special about Ed Gein.
And it's real
and
good.
It was pretty good. Yeah. And it has a lot of the vintage like interviews from back in the day when the day he was caught. And every single one of them is like, it was a bit of an oddball. He was, how did I put it? Martha, how'd you put it? He was an oddball.
I mean,
he is a bit of an oddball.
Jerry Lewis is an oddball. You know, Harry Carey, he was kind of an oddball.
Yeah, and despite Ed being an oddball, the Hills welcomed him into the home without reservation. And in fact, they invited Ed over to dinner from time to time. And in fact, Ed would be watching I Love Lucy after a meal of pork chops with macaroni and pickles at the Hills house on the night of his capture. Hours after he field dressed his second victim and beheaded her in his cellar.
Eddie, I hope everybody likes my meal. I serve this to people. Basically, it's in order to make people fat.
Oh, I don't know. It's pork and beans.
He did a lot of work. He was a hard worker all day, and he got rewarded with pork and pickles.
What I also don't understand about, it's like, great. To me, the concept of oddball and the fact that this was their baseline oddball in Plainfield should have made Plainfield, like, a liberal mecca. Like,
yeah, I mean,
he's just, like, a normal run-of-the-mill oddball. People should have just been showing up there after the crime and just being like, this is where our freak flag can fly, and just have, like have the LGBT community come in and claim it.
I mean, I guarantee you the person that they thought was like the strangest guy in Plainfield was the only one who didn't vote for Barry Goldwater. They're like, yeah, Barry down the street, he's a commie.
No, it was the one gay man who made suits in town.
He was
who
fine.
Who had his oldest friend living with him in his cabin.
Oh, that was normal for Wisconsin. Back in the day, everyone just allowed those things to happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was one woman who came over to Eddie's house one day. Because Ed, he had this big house. And in a moment, I'd say in a moment of near sanity, he decided he needed to get the fuck out of there. And so he talked to a local young couple, and he told them, like, hey, why don't we switch houses? You've got this small house. My mom's dead. My brother's dead. My father's dead. Why don't you guys come out? You can live in my house. I can live in your house, which is just a fair swap. So the woman, you know, the wife, she's like, all right, you know what? This sounds pretty good. He's got that big house out there. So her and the husband came over and took a little tour, and they described, this is disgusting, they described the kitchen floor as slippery with grease.
And this is before Airbnb even existed.
Oh, yeah.
This
is
a great reality show. They do those.
You couldn't leave a one-star review if you wanted to.
No, don't Yelp about the Gein house. Have some class. Yeah. Don't leave the review on Airbnb. This is a great reality show. They do the house swap show.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can imagine if you end up with Ed Gein's home, how exciting that would be.
And you end up in a house that used to be a former, like, oh, look, it was a firehouse. Isn't that funny? Mm-hmm. And there's this pole slide and there's big doors. It's like, oh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And you end up in the other house and it's just full of cut up tits.
Oh, weird. It's a fixer upper.
Yeah. And there was a dead rat on the floor of his kitchen that he had shot with a 22. And he like looked over. He's like, oh, you know, this place is just, I'm going to get around to cleaning it one day.
Oh, that is classic Ed.
Yeah. And the woman actually asked him, was like, hey, Ed, you know, you keep your heads? Is that the room where you keep your shrunken heads? And he just said,
no. They're in this other room over there.
Yeah, and the woman said, oh, you know, people were always kidding with that about things like that.
It's two classic. And a half bedrooms, two and a half baths. The other half of the other bathroom is just chock full of lady knees. I put them over my knees.
Double knees. Yeah, that's good.
You know, he actually dated a woman very briefly. One woman his entire life. She was named Adeline Watkins.
Oh, okay.
And papers would later describe her as, quote, severely plain.
How does one be extremely plain?
Severely plain. Like, that's aggressively plain. Offensively plain.
She was also the most charismatic woman in Plainfield. So that'll tell you a little bit about the town. I think that's adorable.
Yeah.
Of course Ed's going to be with a plain gal. Oh, you know, she got the khaki pants, the button-down shirt. Yeah, perfect for each other.
Let's just say she would be the perfect canvas.
Yes, yes.
So the pair, their first date, they went into a matinee of It's a Wonderful Life.
And isn't it?
And sat next to each other, speechless the entire time.
Good date.
That is very nice, very respectful of the movie and the cinema.
And on the next date, they finally started talking, and she and Ed said, you know, yeah, you know, my mother's passed on. And Adeline, she confessed she couldn't stand living with her widowed mother, said she was a huge pain in the ass. Ed just ended the courtship right then and there.
This is a very similar story, though, to when Rocky Balboa began dating his wife in the movies.
Oh, Adrian.
Adrian. Yeah. They didn't speak very much at all in the beginning.
And that is another severely plain woman.
Yes, and he is sort of crazy because of the boxer brain and the lack of intelligence.
I just want to put this out there then. Again, if anybody out there feels lonely and you feel like you won't find that somebody, you can.
Ed Gein did. BTK was married. All these people found love.
Yeah, at one point or another.
Yeah. I mean, they threw it all away with the bad fascination with death and murder.
I mean, threw away a lot.
Right.
Yeah, they didn't turn it into something constructive like a podcast.
Ooh, very good.
Oh, yeah, and speaking of constructive and speaking of filling your ample amounts of spare time, your days upon hours upon weeks of doing nothing at all, Ed liked to spend his spare time, besides his obvious hobbies, with reading. And in fact, his reading his IQ was actually pegged as normal bright.
Oh, okay.
Because his reading comprehension was huge, and he was a voracious reader, but his reading habits did tend towards the macabre.
Right.
When they went into his house, they found stacks of detective magazines, which outlined brutal crimes, and they found adventure books, which detailed all sorts of South Seas exploits, particularly those involving headhunters.
Mm.
But his favorite stories were about the Nazis. He obsessed over concentration camp guards, specifically ones like Ilse Koch.
Right.
She was the bitch of Buchenwald.
Now, in order to be called singularly the bitch of Buchenwald,
right,
you got to be pretty mean.
Oh. You have to be the meanest one. I want to see his television show. Forget Reading Rainbow. Was that LeVar Burton that hosted that thing? Yeah, I never learned nothing. If I would have had Ed Gein's book club, that would have been great.
Yeah, the Ed Gein book club with Eddie Gein live from Plainfield, Wisconsin.
What I like about this book here is it's got this cover of this woman real thick in the hip.
Yeah.
Real wide in the chest, and she's got a Nazi hat on, and I like the angles of it.
Hey, Mom.
You should read it.
Hey, Mom, can I get... Can I buy one of these? Can I get one of these Nazi books? Yeah, your father has them upstairs.
Ilsa, she was accused of collecting human heads and using the skin of her victims for lampshades and book bindings, and also delighted in reading books about exhumations and necrophilia, like the stories of 19th century aristocrats who robbed graves for their own sexual purposes.
And I also have an example of one of those stories from Harold Schechter's Deviant, which is very interesting, about the story of a young man named Victor Artisan, who was born in 1872 and at the age of 28, after having pursued his perverse activities for more than 9 years, was caught and convicted when his neighbors complained to the police of a terrible stench emanating from his house. The source of this odor turned out to be the cadaver of a 3.5-year-old girl that Artisan had brought home from the graveyard a week before, and until the body had reached such an advanced state of decay that he no longer ventured to touch it, performed cunnilingus on, believing, in words of the physician who has examined him, that this sort of caress could wake the dead.
So he wouldn't touch it, but he ate it out?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
All right.
But you know what? All of this stuff, he did it. Like, he actually, he read right. this stuff, and he followed through, and in fact, he would say later that we're about to get into his graveyard antics, but much like this guy, this necrophiliac, Ed believed that he had the power to raise the dead through sheer willpower.
Right.
In fact, with every body he exhumed, he tried just that thing. But of course, after he failed with that, it was on to the anatomy. He had an extensive collection of anatomy books. His favorite was a secondhand copy of Gray's Anatomy that he picked up on one of his visits to Wisconsin Springs. You know that one, Ben?
Yeah, it's in Wisconsin.
Cool.
Yeah. It's got the spring.
But one,
it's not a place where big people go to burn in the sun?
No. Wisconsin Springs. It's not about springs you think like water reservoirs. It's just springs, mattress springs. Yeah. That's what they specialize
boingy,
in.
Boingy, boingy,
yeah,
boingy.
Great. Fun town.
This is fun.
Yeah.
Well, one story that really caught his eye was the true tale of Christine Jorgensen, which was also a big inspiration for another of my favorite pop culture icons, Ed Wood. Christine Jorgensen was America's first look at the world of sexual reassignment surgery.
Okay.
And Ed, since he was a little boy, he'd always wondered what it was like to be a little girl, to a point of obsession. Never dared tell anyone, but he wanted to be a woman. Like,
right.
That was one of his deep desires, was to be a woman.
It's probably why he kept the weight down.
Got to keep my figure. We talk about this a lot with a lot of serial killers. If there was a way for him to have talked to somebody about these feelings, and again, this is 1950s, nobody wants to talk about sexual reassignment surgery, especially at this point. It's just like, what they do for it is they put a hook on the inside of your own dick, and then they basically have you, they feed it through your urethra until it comes out your asshole, and then they pull it through.
Yeah.
Sink it up.
Yeah.
No one wants to talk about this. So it feels like when you're a little socially mixed up in a bit of an oddball and you want to be a lady, a part of what you get in your head is, I just make a suit out of one.
Right.
Yeah,
it's like if you want to be a businessman, you go to whatever. Joseph A. Banks.
You kill a businessman and you wear his suit.
The businessman. Yes. Dress for the job you want. I want to be a businessman. Well, you got to go skin one and then you get to be him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just you showing up at a job interview just covered with bloody loose skin.
Yeah.
I'm a businessman. It's so nice to meet you. Stocks and bonds.
Barry Goldstein? Is that your skit? I'm Barry.
I meant to say Barry. Barry Sanderson. What was the name? Sugar.
So, Ed, he would, and that's, this is actually a very sad, I mean, it's a lot of different things came together. You know, first of all, he was schizophrenic, highly schizophrenic. Second of all, the horrible abuse that his mother put him through over the years. And third of all, his desire to actually become a woman, all these three things came together. And we joke, but it is true, the only solution he could find was to go to the graveyard and dig up middle-aged women and make suits out of them.
Right.
And this is what he said about how his graveyard antics began.
After my mother died, I began to have strange visions. I developed an uncontrollable desire to see a woman's body. I began to visit cemeteries at night when the moon was full. Had an aunt of mine worked up in a lunatic asylum told me once how patients went wild at this time of the month. I began to watch the papers for obituaries of women. The night after they were buried, I would go to the cemetery and open up their graves.
And then I just start dancing.
You gotta dance.
Ladies night, and it feels all right. Cause this is ladies night. Oh, what a night.
Oh, what a night.
Thank you, Ben.
No problem.
So over a five-year period starting in 1947, 2 years after his mother died, Ed made as many as 40 midnight visits to three local cemeteries, Plainfield, Hancock, and Spiritland, robbing graves at least nine times, leaving the graves afterwards, as Ed would say, in apple pie order.
I don't know. I leave my apple pies looking like a bit of a mess.
Yeah, exactly. They all look like the American pie apple pie after the boy had sex with it. This is the least of his crimes, though. Obviously, killing Mary Hogan is the worst one.
Well, killing Mary Hogan and Bernice Worden.
And Bernice, yeah. So at this point, he's just a grave robber. And again, I still have a very difficult time understanding the human concern for the flesh after we're gone.
The squeamishness.
Well, you're just looking at where this crime happened and when it happened. When these people heard this information come out that he was grave robbing and he was desecrating these corpses, people just literally couldn't understand it.
Yeah.
I was watching interviews with some of these old people that were dealing with it at the time, and they're literally just like, "You did what? What?"
Yeah.
I don't know even what. What?
Yeah.
He did. He had to nipple belt? Like, it's because most of the times, this is the first time an 80-year-old Wisconsinite has said the word nipple.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And now he has to say nipple belt.
Right. And then put it on and everything.
Yeah. And a lot of people were more concerned with the grave robbing than they were with the murders.
Right.
The murders, they could understand murder. There had been murder was and death was not a an odd part of life in Wisconsin, especially in the 1950s.
Part of the country.
Yeah, this is extremely. It was the great dead heart of Wisconsin, for fuck's sake. People would die for no reason. You die. I mean, and death was also a big part of American life at the time. They're not too far out of the Dust Bowl. They're not too far out of the Depression. People starving to death. You know, so death was accepted, but digging up their relatives and making suits out of them, too much for them to handle.
Definitely outside the box.
A lot of work, too. I mean, he would have to do this over a period of, 8 hours or so? Dig up a grave, take out the body,
and in fact,
and
when
redo it?
In fact, when he was first questioned, investigators didn't believe him when he said that he had dug these out of the graveyard because, like they said, like Henry said, he was a small, scrawny guy, and right. The soil was very sandy. In Plainfield. Mm. So if you tried to dig up a grave, just more and more sand would start coming in, and they thought that it was an impossible task for one guy, even if he was strong.
But love to see. I mean, Ed Gein, Ed, how'd you get those traps? How'd you get that strong back?
You'd be surprised at just how many muscles you can build just digging up old fat women and snapping their caskets open and dragging their bodies out and then hauling the bodies up towards the ceiling and gutting them like they're a deer.
Well, you know what? We're gonna go with Billy Blanks as Tybo. That's the video we're gonna be pushing right now. But
I see faces in the leaves and they laugh at me and tell me I can't do it. But I said, it's too late. I already did.
Okay, Ed Gein's exercise routine part one. We're gonna shelve it for now.
Oh, all the corpses were middle aged. All of them were newly dead, and in some cases, they were women that Ed actually knew.
Oh,
well, he was dogging the obituaries. Well, he was reading the obituaries to try picking his perfect ones, each one that basically fit the same amount of water distribution as Augusta.
Augusta.
And he was also severely conflicted. It's basically what he said. He went out about 40 times to do it, but only built up the nerve to do it about 9 times.
Yeah.
He would go freak out, come back to his house. Again, he was very conflicted in what he was doing. He was trying to chase some form of satisfaction from anything in life, which is a human compulsion. You have to feel satisfied. You have to feel like you're happy and you're doing something, and he had nothing. And so this was the only thing that sort of scratched the void, and it's just pretty gross.
Yeah. If you do dig up a cemetery, 1 out of 4 times you're in it. That's bad. I would say 0 out of 4 times.
Yeah. And he would also say, much like he said about the murders, is that he would be in a daze while he was doing it. He said it was some sort of force, something that he couldn't really control. And he said, in fact, there were a couple times that he snapped out of his daze in the middle of robbing a grave, and he would stop. He would bury bury the coffin back, and then go back home. And sometimes he would take a full body, and then he would get back to the house. He would take the parts that he needed for his projects, and then he'd go back to the graveyard, and he'd replace body parts that he didn't want.
Which is his, again, his perverted way of being respectful. He felt that when he was doing that, because he would feel really bad. He would go back and leave parts again because he was like, I didn't need these.
Right.
Don't want to be a greedy guest.
No, definitely not. So hopefully it wasn't like 90% of the way through the grave robbing when he snapped out of it.
Yeah.
No, don't let me snap out of it now. I'm almost done.
It's kind of like taking a bunch of mushrooms and then 2 hours in realizing you were supposed to be at work.
Oh, no.
So Ed's moonlight excursions most of the time didn't get as far as the cemetery, because during most full moons, he wouldn't get any further than his front yard. And for such occasions, Ed had the infamous, what cops referred to as the mammary vest.
What's that, Marcus?
Technically, the mammary vest for him was so much better than like a wedding tux, because a wedding tux you can really only wear once.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And this was something that he made to last. The torso was tanned skin from the upper body of a middle-aged woman, complete with breasts, and he had attached straps to it so he could fasten it tight to his body.
I'm going
to
say this, and I don't want to be gross. All right, you know me. I'm a tasteful person. I don't want to be gross.
Yes.
But I saw some pictures of the mammary vest, and I got to say, those are some pretty rockin' boobies.
Yeah.
They're pretty awesome. Yeah. Whoever was the 50-year-old woman he took them from him was stacked like Elvira.
And, right.
It's got to be... So he chose right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, he wanted to look good.
Yeah.
For sure.
This is my other question. So he's got the titty vest on. Also, which I'm a little upset that he went and got one, because I'm forced to wear one on my body.
Mm-hmm.
He put the titty vest on, pulled up the lady leggings made out of lady, put the arm pieces on, had the gloves on, stuck some hair in his head. And then what did he do?
He danced around in the moonlight with a drum that he made of his own that was made from human skin. He had a human jawbone, and he'd bang on it, and he'd hoot, and he'd holler.
What do you
and
want?
He just had the time of his life.
What do you want him to do, Henry? Go ask a boy out to the Sadie Hawkins dance? What's he supposed to do? He's covered in another human being's flesh. What do you want? You want him to go get a job at A&M Bank?
I feel like that's what he wanted to do. If only he could have lived normal like that. If only the people of Plainfield could have been a little less judgmental.
Well, yeah, you can judge him a little bit.
Yeah, they could judge him a little bit. For he had also face masks that he had made. He had 9 masks made out of human faces. Every single one came from the face of a woman whose grave he robbed. Oh. 5 were for wearing. 4 were for showing.
Ed, your face, your skin looks amazing. Your eyes are so beautiful. There have
Thank
no bags
you so much.
Under
I
your
got
eyes.
It from this woman named Estelle.
What's your secret?
What is creepy? Because to me, the creepiest factor about wearing someone else's face on your face is the sticking the tongue out through the other person's face. Yeah. And going, you got some stamps?
God, I hate it when you do that. That's just the fucking grossest sound in the world.
The tongue and then the nose being inside the other nose. The whole thing. I'm going to go with the whole thing. The creepiest thing is the whole thing.
Can you imagine just walking up and seeing him do it? Him going like, oh, I'm a lady. Whoa, I'm a lady. Talking about a little. You're just looking for some wheat to make some bread?
The strangest.
But I gotta say, I'm plumb embarrassed.
The strangest thing happened. I went to the Gein house to try to get some pork and beans, and then when I got there, all I saw was unbridled joy. It was amazing.
I gotta say, Martha, a part of me wanted to throw up, and a part of me wanted to be like, that's beautiful. He's a living rainbow.
Ed Gein, the living rainbow.
So five of these were for wear, and four were stuffed with newspapers and hung on the wall. Some of the faces were almost mummified. Others had been treated with oil and were fairly well preserved. Some, however, were regularly kept in lipstick and were said to be almost lifelike. And that right there, the lipstick on the face mask, that's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre detail right there.
Right, that's
because
straight.
If you guys didn't know, we actually haven't really said this much, is that Ed Gein was the inspiration for Psycho. He was the inspiration for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He was the inspiration for Buffalo Bill and mm-hmm. Silence of the Lambs. Ed Gein really could be said one of the most important pop culture icons of the 20th century. Of course, of the mid-20th century, yeah. And especially in the world of horror. If Ed Gein wouldn't have existed, the world of horror movies as we know it would not exist. And in fact, American cinema probably wouldn't exist in the form that we know it.
He was the awkward Elvis Presley of wearing somebody else's tits.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Adam Sandler's great movie, Click.
That was also based on The Notebook. Which people didn't know was that the original working title for Nicholas Sparks' Notebook was The Notebook. Parentheses, made from human skin.
Made from human
parentheses.
Skin. I did not know that. That is great to learn.
And what follows now is as far as the piece de resistance of the woman suit that Ed had. This is from the Confessions of Ed Gein. Do you have any recollection of taking any female body parts, the vagina specifically, and holding it over your penis to cover your penis?
I believe that's true.
Would you ever put on a pair of women's panties over your body and then put some of these vaginas over your penis?
That could be, that could be. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever used the facial skins you took as masks, placing them over your face?
That I did.
And would you wear those faces over a prolonged time?
Oh, not too long. I used to have other things to do.
Case
I'm
closed.
Deeply in the middle of Mass Effect 3. I'm trying to get that done. I'm really perfecting my apple pie recipe. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also, I'm making a hat out of just a bunch of hands. It's a fun little hat out of hands. It's a project I'm working on.
Did he ever wear their butts, Mr. Gein?
No, never their butts. I'm not filthy.
Well, in fact, speaking of him thinking things were filthy, he never said, and I believe him on this one, he said that he never had sexual relations with the bodies because he said they smelled too bad.
I disagree with him on that one.
Oh, the dead middle-aged women smell too bad to fuck?
No, that he didn't do it.
Oh, no.
Of course he had sex with these bodies. He was wearing their skin.
He was wearing their skin, but it wasn't his prerogative to have sex. It wasn't, I mean, technically, yes, he is a necrophiliac. But
yes.
I don't believe that he ever penetrated any orifices.
What's more penetrating than wearing a person? You're inside their skin.
Technically, not penetrating the orifice.
Now we're getting into semantics here. You're getting all lawyery.
I'm getting lawyery. I'm just saying, if he didn't have sex with these corpses, I would almost be disappointed in him.
This is what everybody's saying. This is why everybody feels like you, man. They all feel like it. I actually truly believe also that he did not fuck them.
Yeah.
I think that's how much of a fucking weird dork he was that he didn't fuck them. I think that if he fucked them, that would make him even more of like a jock.
I'm saying he fully fucked them. He was wearing them. He was inside of them like a Russian doll.
I mean, technically, Ben, as far as the definition of necrophilia goes, the psychological definition of necrophilia, DSM-4, Yes, Ben, you are correct.
Thank you, Marcus.
But in the real world, in layman's terms,
in the real world,
out of the hoity-toity ivory tower of academia.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it this way. When I wear a leather jacket, do I feel like I'm fucking a cow? No, I don't. But I'm eating a hamburger. Do I feel like, yes, I do feel like I'm eating a cow. That's a bad, feel like I'm fucking, that's fine.
That's fine.
I'm just saying, when you're using them like they're the herd of buffalo,
right?
They stop being potential girlfriends and they start becoming rolls of fabric.
All right. Okay. That's,
you know what I mean? It was only just a matter of time before we started turning them into tents. And eventually weapons.
Yep, selling them at Gander Mountain, the human tent made by Ed Gein.
And Ed, when asked why he chose women in particular, he said,
"The hair, longer hair, seemed to have more value to me. Needed it for my materials."
And he also took this from the Headhunter books that he had, in which longer hair was seen to be of more value.
Did he sew with the
also
hair?
He was also killing mommy. That's also the other thing, too. He was doing mommy, and he doesn't want to talk about that. He had a hard time dealing with that and never understood that. He never made the connection, which is why he rotted away in an institution for the criminally insane for so long.
Rotted? He thrived.
Yeah, he loved it.
Honestly, he did great. That was the best time of his life, was living in that hospital.
Yeah, the second half of his life, I mean, his sunset years. I mean, it's not often that the second half of life is better than the first half, but Ed Gein
should be so lucky.
Yep, and this behavior would carry on for years before Ed, or some might say his mother, chose the next victim. Well, actually, you know, before we start the next thing, we've been having so much goddamn fun talking about old Eddie Gein. We've made the episode way too long.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to make this a three-parter.
And I'm going to tell you this, guys. We're just getting to the good shit.
Yeah.
Getting to good shit. I'm so excited.
Yeah,
now.
We're just now getting to the fucking proverbial blood and guts.
As a fan of fashion.
Mary, who was on the last podcast page a lot, told me a thing that was really funny. You're going to like the next episode so much, you're going to be making some bloomer pudding.
Oh, I can't
wait.
Her
father used to call making a woman fucking moist.
what's wrong with you? Moist. Bloomer pudding.
I gotta say, it's really odd how many weird personal connections we have to Ed Gein. I guess it's just because we know so many people from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But it seems like everybody has an Ed Gein story. Doug, the guitarist in the Cowmen, the band that I'm in, album coming out May 29th.
Oh, okay.
Good plug.
Yeah.
Nice plug.
Thank you. His grandparents were married in Wisconsin the day that Ed Gein was caught.
Oh.
Yeah. My girlfriend, her father, used to drive by Bernice Worden's hardware store once a week on the way to Sheboygan, Wisconsin, and his college friend actually treated Ed Gein at Central State Hospital.
Wow,
so
look
weird.
At that.
And I have a tattoo of Ed Gein around my butthole with the butthole as his mouth.
Isn't that great? And the little hat there on top of your butthole.
Well, guys,
that's the hair.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Well, guys, head on out to cavecomedyradio.com/lastpodcastontheleft to get your Last Podcast on the Left t-shirt. It's $25 domestic, $40 international. Go to iTunes, rate and review. That really helps us out. We were almost in the top 20. Comedy podcast to iTunes yesterday. So your rates, your reviews really help us to get. Let's get in the fucking top 20, man. And I would say fucking Heil Gein, man.
Heil, sweet, sweet Gein. I want to leave you guys. I want to also read a Geiner real quick.
Yeah.
Why did they have to keep the heat on in Ed Gein's house?
Why?
So the furniture wouldn't get goosebumps.
Hey!
That is funny.
Hey, why did they let Ed out of prison on New Year's Eve?
Why?
So he could dig up a date!
Oh, I got it. That's very good. Thanks so much for supporting all the shows here on CCR. Also, Top Hat Roundtable, Page 7, and Sex and Other Human Activities. This would be a good one to talk about on Sex and Other Human Activities.
Actually, we already have.
Yeah, it's one of the other activities.
Yeah.
I was going to say hi to V and to Chris. I miss you guys in Atlanta.
Yes. Hail yourselves, everyone.
Oh, and by the way, to listener out there in Indiana, Kevin Cleveland is indeed my cousin.
Oh.
And stop calling him a liar.
Uh-oh. We got a feud.
Hail Satan, you've always been good to me, and we're going to make a lot of money this year, Satan. Yeah, that's you'll right. see. You'll see, Satan. You'll see.
Magustalations, everyone.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, Magustalations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't forget
Hail
that
me.
Yeah.
I love you.
All right, well.
I love all of you.
Is this a cry for help now?
I love all of you, and some of you more specifically. I love you the most.
All right, someone just message Henry something nice.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.